Yes, we are back once again for the 202nd installment. The 202nd installment of the Parish of the Patriots show. I'm glad you're here, whether you're a repeat member of the congregation or you just stumbled upon us your first time listening. Hopefully you won't be disappointed. So if you are a new listener, we do have a Christian-specific segment that's roughly around the halfway point of the show, very roughly. And yeah, I encourage you, whether you're a Christian believer or not, stick around for it. It's usually something quite a bit different, I think, than anything you're going to hear anywhere else. I'm always on the Friday installment of the Daily Nationalist, most always, with Sven. And like the past two episodes, we've done stories, you know, involving the Church of England. So yes, the Christian-specific segment here at the Parish of the Patriots is nothing like attending, the, you know, belonging to the Church of England. So you won't get any of that there in our Christian-specific segment, in our sermons here. So yeah, you might want to stick around for it. You might get something out of it. Like I said, that's further on in the show. We do pass around, just like any other congregation, we pass around the offering plate. I make it brief. I try to not make a big deal out of it, but it is very much appreciated. If you do get something out of the show, throw a little something in the plate. It means a lot, and it's really, really easy. If you want to be a part of that, just go to the bottom of the description page for the show here on Radio Albion, and you'll see I got snail mail down there, which doesn't get any easier than that. Got Bitcoin, got Monero, got email address down there. Drop your notes. If you got a different cryptocurrency, drop me an email. I can more than likely get you an address for that. And like I say, it's all very much appreciated. So with that having been said, our listener supporter mailbag, Christmas has wound down. We're into 2023. I still got some Christmas cards straggling in. And it's one of the things I really enjoy about doing this show, among many things I enjoy about doing this show. But around Christmas, I get Christmas cards. And I probably get... Yeah, I mean, compared to the average person, I probably get a lot of Christmas cards from all of y'all. I just think it's kind of cool. It's neat. But I do have a few Christmas cards still straggling in here. Listener, supporter, mailbag. Support received from Tony. Appreciate that, Tony. Very, very much. No note there, but I just want to let you know I got it. GPD, keep the good times rolling. That's from Mr. T. Yes. We're at 202 and rolling. And by the way, I've the cedar pollen right now is here where I live in Texas is through the roof. So if I sound like I have the sniffles, perhaps more than usual, I kind of always do. My sinuses are always bad. It's just like a constant state of norm. This is the reason why. And I've got this. The cedar pollen's been so bad. I've got this like frog in my throat. And I'm probably going to wind up having to pause the recording and cough and clear my throat multiple times to get through the show. So bear with me. I'm sure some of that's going to wind up bleeding through. So I try to keep the show top quality. Believe it or not, if you're a regular listener, you'd be like, this is your attempt at top quality. I hate to see a half-hearted attempt, but I do attempt to do a high-quality show. Don't want the quality to suffer, but we'll do our best. But bear with me, because yes, no, and you know, when we talk about cedar here, it's actually a juniper. It's like an ash juniper that we have here in Texas. You can go like on, you can go on the internet and look up videos of what these cedar trees, what we call Texas cedar, what it looks like when they release pollen. And you'll understand, sometimes when they get in a heavy pollen release, it will turn up on the weather radar. It's just that bad. So, yeah, it's a real thing. GPD, the Lord has come. May his joy and peace be with you now and throughout the new year. And that's from Triangle Whip. And yeah, I appreciate it. Triangle Whip. Throughout the year, when I need God's peace throughout the coming new year, I get the feeling it's going to be very, I'm sure it'll be a very clownish and interesting 2023, just as 2022 was. No sign of anything letting up on that front. So yeah, may the peace of the Lord be on all of us. May the sanity of the Lord be on us so everybody else goes crazy. You know, it's when you live in a world that's just everything is lies, when you live in a world where it seems like everybody's promoting some form of insanity and that's what's amplified through the media. You know, it's like the one sane person living, if you're locked in an insane asylum, I think after a while you'd start thinking you're the crazy one. You know, I think that bleeds over into the world at large. So I think I always say it's important to get out and talk to other people, like real people in life. Just casually get out and talk to people. And remember, because I do, we got all of this stuff that this negativity, these negative things, you know, like all of this social justice bullcrap, which is, of course, the opposite of social justice. All of this anti-white race hatred that is promoted around. And I think it's important to remember that this stuff is being amplified by the media. You know, most people have still already been banned from Twitter. I know some of that is supposedly being reversed, but for the most part, everybody's been banned from social media, you know, and the media takes these things and amplifies them. And that's why I think it's important to talk to real people. Don't live like a hermit. Get out there. God didn't make us to live like a hermit. If he did, we would all just live by ourselves, separated individuals. But we are a communal. We're a communal species. We're supposed to interact with one another. Get out there and interact with the regular people and remember, because it will remind you. I mean, yeah, I mean, they may not, like, you know, be on your level about being aware of, you know, this, that, or the other. But they're probably, you're going to find that most people are not going to be a quote-unquote social justice warrior. You see these things and it shows around. It looks like all of these people, but the media is amplifying that. This is a very small group of mentally unstable people that they think they've found some sort of meaning in their life by inventing these moral crusades, these social crusades. And it furthers the agenda. It furthers the narrative that the government, that the media wants to promote. And so they amplify it. Get out, if all you do is read social media or read news stories, you're going to have this impression that the world is, that everybody in the world should just be put in the same gunny sack and drown. But you got to get out and talk to other people. And then you understand that, you know, no, that's just bullshit. That's just the media lying like they lie about everything else. It is an amazing thing because we know the media lies. They're the media lies. And you'll have people and you know, they'll tell you in one breath that the media is lying. But then the next day you see them and they'll be going on and on about something. You're like, well, I don't know that's right. Where did you hear about that? Well, from the media. And it's like, well, there's one thing. The media is totally not lying to us. Like, for instance, we saw that during the height of the coronavirus hysteria. You had people that, like, 6 months before were going on about the lying media, you know, fake news. President Trump, you know, parroting President Trump about the fake news. But then they turn around. It's like, well, not on this, though. The media is totally telling us the truth about this. I had to wonder, you know, because it's. I was thinking about, like, the conflict in the Ukraine with Russia, you know, and it's like it's like people have this idea, like, the conflict is being played out on social media, like Russia's getting totally owned on Twitter. So that means, quote unquote, we're winning. And that's not the reality on the ground. And they go around and then they're conveying this narrative like Ukraine's going to take all their territory back. Like, when everybody is, like, dead in the when everybody's going to wind up, like, dead in the country. You know, what do you mean you're going to take territory back? And I think when Russia goes in and wraps this up, how's the media going to suddenly reverse track from talking about Russia? It was like how they were saying last year, like in April, they were like, well, Russia's only got two weeks left of missiles. They're going to run out of missiles. And it's like they're still dropping missiles on the Ukraine. You know, but they just pretend that the answer is there. Or when they wrap this up, they just pretend like they never said any of that. You know, they just make things up and they just go to the next lie. Just go to the next lie and pretend like the last lie they said, they never said that. And it's like during the coronavirus thing, they're going around like, you know, talking about vaccine mandates to keep your job. And now they're trying to act like, oh, well, we never said that. We never said we were promoting that stuff. It was amazing during the coronavirus thing. Because, like I say, you have people that were talking nonstop about the lying media. And then they got on board with the coronavirus thing. And they were like, well, this time the media, it's like, you're really saying that this time they're not lying? This time the government and the media are totally telling you the truth. Now, everything else they lied about, but not this. This is too serious. Too serious. I was reading a story before sitting down to record the show. I remember years ago, because this happened, gosh, decades ago, I believe, you know, they passed a law because this, back like in, say, the 80s and the 90s, they pretended like they cared about how much money the government was spending. And they passed this law putting a debt ceiling. They said, we're going to put an end to this endless debt that the U.S. government is running. So the Congress passed a law and the president signed it, a debt ceiling. That way, there was a limit, and they would hit this limit, and the government couldn't spend any more money. They would have to cut their spending, and they touted this to the people. My democracy. It's so wonderful. They touted this to the people. We're getting government spending under control. We've passed a debt ceiling. And now, when the government hits that debt ceiling, they can't spend any more money. And they'll have to cut their spending and balance their budget. They used to say that. I remember all these different frauds running for different offices, and they would sit there and say, yeah, there's no reason the U.S. government shouldn't have to balance their budget, shouldn't have to balance their checkbook, just like you, the American people, they got to balance their checkbook. And, of course, there's one thing, because we're now decades later, I read this story, because you see, they put a caveat in there that they can vote to raise the debt ceiling. And guess what? They haven't cut spending. They didn't balance
their budget, just like you, the American people, got to balance your budget. They did never do that.
It was all meaningless. We passed the debt ceiling. See, TMR has come through for you again. We're going to rein government spending in. They didn't tell everybody. They also put a caveat in there that they can vote to raise the debt ceiling when they approach it. And so what has happened? They've never cut spending. Every time they hit the debt ceiling or get close to the debt ceiling, they just vote to raise it again. Raise it higher. Maybe get some concessions to get what they want. It was just a ploy so that they could, maybe get some extra things for themselves out of it before they vote inevitably to raise the debt ceiling. And of course, we're now at the point where the government inevitably has to spend this money. We talk about inflation, and one of the things y'all know, if you've been listening to the show for a long time, one of the things that I can't stand the terms is, money printing. The government just keeps printing and spending this money, but that's not the way it works. We're having inflation because all this money being printed. Well, yes, that's right, but technically, not to be hyper-autistic about it or something, but that's not technically how it works. They don't, how does the money get into circulation? That's always the part of the equation everybody leaves out. How does that money get into circulation? Because they're talking about, they've printed all this money. Well, they didn't drop my suitcase of $100 bills off on my doorstep. What about you? How does it get into circulation? That's the important part. And that's how the money supply, by the way, gets decreased. And we might get into that here. Man, I'm not an economics expert. But the way the money goes into circulation is it has to be lent. It has to be borrowed. That's how they, quote unquote, print the money. It has to be borrowed. If nobody borrows the money, if they actually enforced the debt ceiling, then no more money would get put into circulation, no more additional money. And by the way, if you massively default on the loans, that's how the money gets taken out of circulation, because it's not inevitably always in circulation. Since money is loaned into existence, basically, it's put into circulation through loans. Defaults on those loans wind up equating to being deflationary. But anyway, like I said, I'm not an economics expert, but I do understand. I do understand that much. Because of this, here's the thing. The American people are tapped out. They've imported like all these people from the third world, and it turns out they don't have credit. Who could have guessed? So they can't use them for additional borrowers. They tried to increase home ownership. That was trying to increase more money in the circulation. They just tried to get more people to go into debt. 30-year mortgages. Remember 2008? They dress, part of that is they dress it up. Part of it is because they do push these weird social experiments, these social agendas. But the part that got left out of that, they're like, the government was pushing for minority homeowners that didn't have good enough credit to pay them for their mortgage. And people would look at that through the singular lens of the government just wanted more black people to own homes. They shouldn't want black people to own homes because they don't have the credit to own homes. But they missed the other part of that, which is what? They're trying to keep that money going. They got to get more people to go into debt.
Yes, on the surface, it's like people that have a really low credit score, no way to pay for the mortgage, pretty bad idea to loan the money out to them. But that's how desperate they were. You see, they were out of white people with good credit. They were out of white and Asian people with good credit to loan money to. Those people are getting tapped out. So they're going to the black people and saying, well, we'll just let you buy a $500,000 house with a, you know, I don't know, 400 credit score, whatever the hell, no money down. You see, this isn't just about as dressed up as we want more black people to own houses, but it's really about we're just desperate to get this money industry to push more money out. And that's how it's got to be done, is it got to be borrowed. That's how it gets put into circulation. And of course, it blows up. That's why the government spending is inevitable. It's going to raise the debt ceiling. You ever read this article? It's like, you know, like there's going to be controversy. They're going to raise the debt ceiling. Pretending like they're not is like the Republicans, like we're absolutely not ever going to vote for Kevin McCarthy for the Speaker of the House. Well, yeah, they did. That's why he moved his stuff in the office, because he knew it was inevitable. It's how democracy works. It's our values. Yeah, it's inevitable. They're going to raise the debt ceiling. We all know this. They're going to probably make some noise. Team R will try to pretend like they're really going to draw the line this time. They won't. Why? Because the government is now basically the last entity left to take out loans. To take out loans. They got to borrow that money. And the government is essentially the lender of last resort. Now they're borrowing money for all kinds of crap. They're borrowing money to spend on crap. Nobody even knows where it goes. You know, the money laundering in the Ukraine, that's well documented. Everybody knows it's a black hole of corruption, and that money gets circulated back to political parties and individual politicians and individuals. It's going everywhere. It doesn't matter. They're just pushing the money out. And that's not the only place. You don't know. There's so much corruption. They say, oh, we're allocating this millions of dollars to what? Education. That's a nice, vague, you know, broad term. You know, how will we know specifically what it was spent on? You won't. The government has to borrow that money because they're basically the only ones left. Never mind that if you used a personal equivalent, the government now is living off their credit cards. They really are. They're living off their credit cards. And if you live long enough, you're going to know somebody, hopefully not you. And if it is you, learn your lesson and don't do that again. But you're inevitably going to know somebody that winds up essentially living high and living on their credit cards while they're making that minimum payment. They're making that minimum payment. You looking at them and you're like, man, they got it made. Why do you think they got it made? Man, they got these like three new cars, a boat, big fancy brick house. They got it made. Look at them. They go out to eat at a fancy restaurant, you know, five times a week. But what you don't know is they're living all that on credit card. Like you use every time you see them in town at the fancy restaurant or at the grocery store, whatever the case may be. You know, they're putting it's always that credit card, not even that check card, because you let me use that check card for everything. You know, that's just coming out of your checking account. That's just money. You're just not handling cash. But they're using that credit card. Everything's going on the card and they're just making that minimum payment. And what happens inevitably to those people is at some point in time, they can't make, because the minimum payment is just like barely covers the interest. That's a minimum payment. That's a trap. They get you indebted, more servitude. At some point in time, they can't get new credit. They keep getting new credit cards. When they max one credit card out, they get another credit card and start making the minimum payment on in. They just, the party rolls on. But at some point in time, the party ends. At some point in time, they can't make the minimum payment anymore. They just don't have the money. And then they go broke. You see, the government is like that. The government at this point is living on their credit cards. There ain't no going back. You know, like I said, back in the 90s, you know, Ross Perot, you know, he'd be like, you know, now's the only time we're going to curb this in. Well, nobody ever curbed it in. They voted for the guy that they liked his hair. Women thought he was handsome, Bill Clinton. You know, it didn't matter. You vote for him or Team R, it didn't matter. You did have, like I say, back in the 90s, you had Ross Perot coming out and saying, man, this is going to turn into a mess down the road. But nobody wanted to listen to that. And then they quickly, you know, when he started to get some traction, they changed the rules so that that couldn't happen ever again. It's part of our democracy. See, part of our democracy is you only get two parties. If a third party comes in and starts trying to upset the apple cart, they change the rules so that you can't ever have a third party come in again and upset the apple cart, change the rule. We can't have that. Now, the government has no choice. So they're continuing to live on their credit cards, maxing them out. The Federal Reserve is the lender. But when we talk about, we hear about like the Great Reset. We hear a lot about the Great Reset. And for the most part, we don't hear about it beyond the perspective of, you know, you will live in the pod, you will eat the bugs, and you will be happy with nothing. But the necessity of the Great Reset. You see, because at some point in time, just like the individual person you might know, who at some point in time, they can't make the minimum payment anymore. Now, when the government hits that time, and it's coming sooner rather than later, at some point, because people are just like, well, the government just print more money to pay the interest. The government ain't the one creating the money. That's the Federal Reserve. That has nothing to do with the government, besides some window dressing. That's the banks. It's the banks. The privately owned banks. Now, when the government can't make the minimum payments, what's going to happen then? You're going to have a Great Reset, because one of two things are going to happen. Now, if you had an actual functioning independent government that tried to represent the people in some sort of way, what would happen then is the government would default on it, privatize or nationalize the banks, rather, nationalize the banks, take over the banks, probably issue a new currency and say, yeah, all you bankers that loaned all that money, y'all are broke now, just like everybody else. Welcome to the real world. We're nationalizing the banks. We're going to issue a new currency and we're going to start all over again with some sanity. You see, that's what would happen. It would still be tough. You know, don't let people romanticize, you know, that it would be like, you know, in 2 days, the whole thing would be fixed. It would still be tough, but that's the way you fix it. You let the bankers go broke. You let the banks go under. You nationalize the banks and you issue a new currency, preferably based on something. People get hung up, you know, on like, you know, it's got to be based on gold and silver. And they don't understand that that makes the currency manipulatable just as the same as anything else. We went off the gold standard and they started manipulating the currency. You can manipulate the currency with the gold standard as well. It's fine. I'm not saying you can't base it on gold. I'm just saying it needs to be based on something. You know, the labor output of the people or your natural gas and oil reserve, whatever. But preferably have it kind of at least tied to something. Now, that's what would happen in a normal situation. But we know that ain't going to happen in the U.S. Can you have a picture? Under our current democracy of our values of who we are system that we live under, can you imagine a scenario where the government actually came in and told the banks that they're going to have to go broke? We've seen what happened in 2008 when they were trying to push more money out via unqualified home lenders. The government ran out and just simply borrowed more money and pushed the numbers off of this balance sheet onto their own balance sheet and borrowed more money. So that the banks wouldn't have to go broke. There's no way to imagine any scenario where the government is going to tell the bankers to go get stuffed and they're broke now. That is not going to happen under this system. It's not. So what's going to happen? Well, they're going to confiscate all the assets. I always say, you know, people get over here, the bankers, they've got all of this balance, this money that's owed to them. They created that out of nothing. They entered some numbers on a computer. They've got nothing. Can you imagine? Like if I sat here at my computer and I typed some numbers into my computer and emailed them to you. And then as a result of that, I get your house. What did I actually put in? I typed some numbers in the computer. It's owed to the bankers. They don't owe them shit. They typed some numbers into a computer and they're going to get these assets. If I sent you, emailed you some numbers, and because I emailed you these numbers, now I get your house. You'd feel like that was a pretty raw deal. You'd be like, why do you get my house? The assets are always the end game. It's the same way in the Great Depression. They talk about, you know, they knew, like I have seen like documentaries and stuff where they try to paint like the banks were victimized. Were victimized because these poor stupid farmers borrowed money and then couldn't pay it back. And the poor bankers were forced to confiscate these farms. That's always the goal. They want the assets. And that's what we're going to have here. Because there's no way when we hit that point, I don't know when it is, but it's coming. a lot sooner than it used to be. We're going to hit the point where the government can't pay the interest. They can't pay the minimum payment on their credit cards. They're not going to nationalize the banks. So we're not getting that. So what are you going to get? You're going to get a great reset, which is going to mean when they say, that's why they floated that slogan out there. It's like people are talk about it negatively, but still it's now in the public psyche. You'll own nothing and be happy. I remember when that first floated out, I said, well, if you're going to own nothing, I mean, somebody's going to own it. Who's going to own it? BlackRock's going to own it. The banks are going to own it. When the government can't make the minimum payments anymore, then all of a sudden the government's going to go, the government that acted like, you know, we're these pariahs out there and they're up there in their castle. When the government can't pay, all of a sudden we will be the government. Well, the people voted for this. It's your fault because you voted for the politicians that put it in. So that makes you responsible. We collectively, we all of a sudden we the American people, we owe this debt to the sacred bankers. You got to have to pay the banks. Well, nobody can pay the banks, so what are they going to do? The assets. Sure, they'll start with government assets. I can see it now. I can see it now. You know, Yellowstone Park will be, I don't know, J.P. Morgan Chase Park. It's like all these stadiums, football stadiums. It's AT&T Stadium. It's not Texas Stadium. It's AT&T. It's, I don't know, Globe Life Field. It'll be like that. That's where it'll start. But that ain't going to be where it stops. They have more. The asset confiscation will begin. That will begin the official move. They want everybody to be prepared for they're going to take your assets. You'll own nothing and be happy. It's in the public mind. People are getting prepared for it. Even if they don't like it, see, they got the people that are negative reacting to that and mocking it and all of that. But you see, they got them working through it now. So that it's not a huge shock when it comes around. They're getting everybody mentally prepared for it. They're letting you work through the anger and the rejection of it. So that when it's actually implemented, you'll be much more ready to accept it. It's going to be, you'll eat the bugs. Eat the bugs and live in your pod. And of course, they won't. It's like when I talked earlier about the COVID thing, you know. Remember when, like, in California had one of the strictest masking policies and people had to stay home. And then, like, there's all these government people and the governor and all this shit. And they're sitting in a fancy restaurant. You know, and they got the whole restaurant to themselves because technically the restaurant's supposed to be closed. And they're all sitting there yakking it up and drinking their fine wine. That'd be what it looks like. You eat the bugs and live in your pod. And they'll own everything. They won't be eating bugs. They're going to be eating beef. They're going to be eating fish. They're going to be eating the finest. You're going to eat the bugs. They're going to have to dress it up. They got to get people mentally prepared to have the assets. I'm talking about what are they going to do? The way in the past was they would reset through a big war, you know, kill everybody. But the problem is with the, you know, in the age of nuclear weapons, it's a little dicey. I don't know. They may not want it to go nuclear. Then again, they're not very competent, so they may get nuclear after all. I don't know. But they do. At some point in time, the government will not be able to make the minimum payment. They won't be able to service just the interest on the debt anymore. Then what? They're going to cut spending? No. No, no, no. Mortgage house. They'll essentially be like the people you see, you hear about, like, they get in so much debt and they start selling their organs. You're going to be their organs. It's like, you know, the guy that like got into a bunch of, I watch Korean dramas. See, and that's a theme in Korean dramas. Like guy goes into debt gambling. And so, you know, he like sells his wife's kidney or sells his kidney. You are the kidney. The government's going to sell you off. They're going to sell your assets off because see, we collectively owe this money that the government spent that you can get a damn thing out of. To see, it's we the people, you see, we are collectively responsible. That's a great thing about the democracy and our values of who we are. You see, you the people, we the people are collectively responsible because we voted for these people. And of course, never mind the fact they never do what we wanted them to do. We're collectively responsible. And we are going to, there's going to be a lot of talk. You mark my words, there'll be all this talk about shared sacrifice. We have to have the shared sacrifice. They're doing it now. Look at Europe. You know, with their economies being collapsed, they're being deindustrialized, they're being strip mined right before us. And what do they say? Well, they have to have a shared sacrifice in Europe
for the Ukraine, the sacred borders of the Ukraine. We have to have shared sovereignty. They're going to have all this talk. When the government can't pay the interest anymore, they're going to have all this talk about shared sacrifice. We have to have shared. We're all in this together. Let's talk about we're all in this together. Same assholes have been talking down to you and saying you're the worst people in the world, you know, because of your I don't know, your racism, sexism, misogyny, whatever the hell you are. Whatever the hell you're guilty of. The same people that would like spit on you if you got within 10 feet of them, all of a sudden they're going to be talking about we're all the, you collectively, we're collectively responsible. You have all these shills on social media talking about we voted for these people, it's our fault. You have all these people suddenly talking about, you know, we've got to, you have all these people pretending to be Christians talking about, well, the wicked borrow and do not repay. So we're collectively responsible for all this debt that the government owes. You don't want to make Jesus mad, do you? You have all this talk about we shared sacrifice. We've got to stand for our values of who we are. We've got to, we. There won't be any talk about who profited from all of this. There won't be any talk about, well, all I really owed is some numbers on a computer that the banks created out of thin air, just sitting there typing it in their computer. Maybe we don't owe them anything. Maybe we could tell them to go get stuffed. Maybe they were the ones that made a bet, and maybe just once in the history of the world, perhaps the bet shouldn't have to go their way. Maybe it wouldn't be the end of the world if they didn't win this one. Maybe it'd be better if the rest of us won for a change. You're going to hear that. You think the media is going to tell you that? You think they're going to allow that on social media? No. The banks always have to win. But we are going to have shared sacrifice. We're all in this together. We've got to pull ourselves together, America. I can hear it now. We got to pull ourselves together, America. We're in this together. We're the greatest nation. We're the light, the shining beacon on the hill. How much money you got in your bank account now, Mr. Politician? Where did it come from? Shared sacrifice. They're going to be sacrificing just like Newsom was during the coronavirus thing, sitting there yakking it up at a fancy restaurant. Just Boris Johnson having parties when everybody else is told they can't leave their house. They got the police out patrolling. Catch you out of your house without your mask. Going to get in trouble with the law. That's how it's going to be. They're getting you. They've got everybody. They're pushing all this stuff. They got everybody getting in that mindset for this two-tiered system. So they're used to it. They're conditioned to the two-tier system because it's coming. It's coming. The day's coming when the government can't pay the interest on the debt anymore. And then, boom, they got to have everybody ready. They can't just bring it in all at once. They get everybody conditioned. The coronavirus thing, see, that was part of it. Getting everybody conditioned to this two-tier system. Yeah, they see a picture of Gavin Newsom or Boris Johnson or whatever the hell else politician yucking it up, drinking champagne and eating steak while everybody else is told to stay home and eat the bugs or wear the freaking mask in their house. You're supposed to be outraged. They're letting you work the outrage out now when it's harmless. You see? That way, when the two-tier system is officially implemented and becomes a way of life, we're being moved into it now. And when it's solidified as a way of life, you won't question it. See, you're working through the anger now when it's harmless. That way, when you're eating the bugs and living in your pot and you don't own anything and they're telling you to be happy and the media is telling you to be happy, if you catch wind of, you know, the politicians are eating steak and living in a mansion, you just shrug it off. Well, that's just the way it is. It's just our values of who we are in the democracy. Mark my words. You're going to hear so much talk about we've got to come together. We got to come together as America. We've made sacrifices before. Look at the greatest generation. Look at the sacrifices they made during the Great Depression. What kind of sacrifices did the banks make? Don't ask about that. See, you got to follow. You've got to make the sacrifice. You, the American people, we've got to pay the price because we spent all this. We didn't. We're just broke. You just devalued our currency and our wages and to the point that everybody's now equally broke. And you told us, don't be mad about being broke. You see, what you got to be upset is racism.
If you're black, the reason you're broke is because white people are keeping you down. If you're white and you're broke, it's because you're stupid. If you weren't stupid, you'd have a cushy job in the media or some shit. But getting broke. Just, oh, it's amazing. No, they are. They are establishing, they're getting it set up in people's minds. It's coming collectively. You're going to have to come together, America. Make the sacrifice. They won't make the sacrifice, of course. You got to make the sacrifice. It's all a big sham. Always remember that it's going to be funny to see it come about. It's kind of like the people that were going around on social media during the coronavirus thing talking about, you know, I hope all you people that refuse to take the vaccines die a horrible death because you deserve it. You should be denied medical care. They should refuse to let you in the hospital because you're going to die of the deadly doom virus. And then you see them coming around later talking about, well, we need to have an amnesty because, you know, we need to be understanding because we just didn't know. You know, we wanted what was best, you know. We wanted what was best. We just didn't know. All of a sudden, I mean, lots of talk of unity and coming together, shared sacrifice. Because we all have to pay so the banks don't have to. It's our values of who we are. We got to get into the Christian specific segment, looking at the time here. So, yeah, hopefully you'll stick around for that. Hopefully you'll get something out of it. And yeah, like I say every week, you know what to do. Get in there, fill those pews. Let's get into this week's sermon here at the Parish of the Patriots. And for this week's Christian specific discussion, I really don't have any Bible verses to read this week. I just kind of thought we'd talk a little bit of, you know, kind of reflect a little bit and think about what it means to be alive here on the earth, here to be walking through this life. Now, I've talked and we've discussed several times, you know, that, you know, our purpose in life as Christian believers is to be growing, is to be learning, to becoming more and more spiritually mature. And sometimes it can get discouraging because, you know, you're struggling with things and you can get distracted and whatnot. And it seems like you're not making any progress. But I do believe that as long as you apply yourself and continue to try to get closer to God and don't give up, I believe that we will make progress. And I think sometimes if you just stop and look back over like several years time in your life, you'll realize that actually you've actually progressed. In the short term, it doesn't feel like it because we live in an instant gratification society. We want God to swoop in and fix us like now, overnight. Overnight, we talked here a while back about one of the things, you know, for new believers, people that just have newly accepted Christ in their life, you know, they think they're going to have this like they're going to get up the next day and not be dealing with kind of the same BS that they were dealing with before. Like it's supposed to instantly change their lives and they're a whole new person the next day. Well, in reality, yeah, you're a whole new person in the whole, but that begins the work. I mean, that you got enrolled into the school. Now you start the lessons. Now you start growing. And of course, we do. We understand that our role in this life is to be growing spiritually and maturing. We don't, but don't get discouraged. We shouldn't get discouraged when it seems like you know, it's not happening fast enough. Also, we are alive. You know, I mean, this life isn't, this life, you know, we have good stuff, we have bad stuff, we've got things we look forward to, we got things we're dreading, we've got a really uncertain future in this world we're living in right now. But all of those things remind us that we are alive. We do have this time right now. We're not ever going to have it again. We are in this time. We have this segment of time that we've been given. And it won't last forever. It will end. And I think it's important to, you know, live life to the fullest. I really do. I mean, it's just, God didn't put us here to be miserable either. We do have trials. We do have suffering. These are the things we grow through. But at the same time, I don't believe it makes us extra godly, like, to be miserable. You know, because you do. You run into people who say they're Christian and whatnot, and yet it's like they have this mindset like the more miserable they are, that equals humility. You know, being down on themselves means that they're humble. We're supposed to be joyous. We have life. We're supposed to be as close to Christ like as we can. And that doesn't mean being down in the dumps and miserable. Of course, like I say, we do know we're here to grow. I don't think we should ever in any aspect of our lives become stagnant.
And I think there's a lot of cases where people actually just become stagnant and they're like, this is it. This is my life, whether it's in their Christian faith or how they live, you know, how they live their lives in general. I think an example of spiritual stagnation are these people that basically sit around and, you know, they're waiting on the rapture. They're waiting on Jesus to come and just fix everything. And they don't feel as though anything is required of them. You know, while they're here alive on this earth, they're just sitting around. They're stagnant. There's no real striving for growth. There's no real looking around saying, well, what can I do? What should I be doing in this situation? Where can I be finding what God's doing and pitching into that work so that I can come to understand? They just sit around. They've got their hands folded. They're waiting for Jesus going to come back and fix all of this. So why do I need to do anything? We know that Jesus is going to return and judge everybody. I'm just waiting for that. I don't need to be doing anything. And, when he shows up, he'll take care of it. Yeah, Jesus is going to show up and judge everything, including you. I mean, when he comes back and you're not doing any of the work he's given you to do, then, that's not necessarily going to be a positive thing. Spiritual stagnation. And just getting satisfied with the status quo. Now, again, this goes hand in hand with not being discouraged, because we have to understand that up until the day we die, we're going to be working on spiritual growth. In fact, I believe the final trial of life is facing death. And, you know, sometimes death just comes instantaneously. You know, you're in a traffic accident and you're killed instantly. But also oftentimes death comes around and we see it coming. And maybe we see it a year or so off or several months off. And then that time frame gets shorter, weeks. And at some point, you know that you have days or even only hours left to live. I do think the ultimate trial of our faith, the ultimate thing, the graduation trial, if it were in this life, is when we face death and how we face that. And we face it head on. Do we fight against it and don't want to do it kicking and screaming? Because I wouldn't be critical of anybody of how they face it, because everybody has to face it on their own terms. But we will have to face it as the ultimate thing everybody has faith in that face. And I do. I think it's kind of like the ultimate trial of your faith. I think one of the things that does make death such a trial is that you're forced to kind of more or less look back, reflect on your life, and think about the things that, you know, you didn't do, you know, regrets perhaps, or things that you wish you would have done. And, you know, that's legit. But that also reminds us that, you know, now is the time. You know, now is the time to live your life. You know, what do you want to do? And now, I'm not going to give you one of these. I'm going to sit here and do one of these BS motivational things. I remember seeing somebody here several years ago, young guy. And, you know, he hasn't really even experienced anything in life. And he's talking about just seize your dreams, man. Just get out here. Just figure out. Just grab the world and do what you're. It's like, dude, you haven't even been through any hardships yet. What are you even on about? You know, you don't even know what life is actually about. You know, oh, go chase your dreams. Well, sometimes that's not financially possible. That's just reality. Sometimes you can't do the things you want to do because it's just not in the realm of possibility for you. You know, you might want to be an Olympic marathon runner, but if you're crippled and in a wheelchair, that's not going to happen. And the sooner you can accept that that is not going to, you know, not going to happen, you know, the better off you are. I would never, you know, I hate it when people, you know, do that nonsense about you can achieve anything, you can do anything you want. That's bullshit. You know, you can't. Sometimes you can. And if you can, you should do that. You know, now is the time. To experience the things we want to experience, if we can do that. But what I think is more important than you know, looking at these external things, I don't know, looking at, you know, finding your dream job or I don't know, buying your dream car, whatever kind of nonsense that people get caught up in. I think the important thing to reflect in is this time that we have to have, you know, how we relate to people, the relationships that we have with people, we your friends, family, acquaintances, people you work with, whatever the case may be. You know, how do you want your life to be relating to people? I see people and they get stagnant.
they get stagnant. And then, you know, when your life starts running out, then you look back and it's like, well, I wish I could have done this, and I wish we could have done that, and I wish I could have been closer to, you know, these family members or this person or whatever. And, you know, but why didn't you do that? You know, because we could become stagnant. It's so easy to get stagnant and quit striving for that. If you want to have closer relationships with your family, friends, or the person you're married to, whatever, well, we talk all the time on this show about how you don't have control over other people, and you really don't. You have control over yourself, so you have to make that effort. If you're estranged from your family, you've got, say, siblings or parents or children, whatever, and like you don't talk to them anymore because you had a big falling out, but you want to mend that relationship. If you spend your life waiting around for them to do it for you, it may never happen. They may make that effort, but it also, it may never happen. If you want to do that, you need to find a way to reach out to them. Maybe send them a letter. I know it's old fashioned. Maybe start sending them a card at Christmas and put a note in there saying, you know, I'm thinking about you. I miss you. You know, it was kind of silly what we had this fight over. Let's move on from whatever. But put that effort in. You need to put that effort in. If you sit around and wait for someone else to approach you, you know, they may never do it. And it may not be because they don't want to. They may have the impression that you don't want them anywhere around you, and they think they're respecting what you want. They may want to be closer to you. They may want to heal this rift, but they may think, well, you know, you don't want me to do that. You want me to stay as far away as possible, so I'm going to honor that. You know, I'm going to respect your wishes and stay away. And what happens is everybody gets stagnant, and nobody ever fixes it. And you know what? The clock is ticking. You might sit around and think, well, you know, we'll get this worked out, you know, this year, next year, a couple years from now. But the clock is ticking. And when the clock is ticking down and there's no time left, you squandered that opportunity to repair that relationship, to at least make the effort. If you make the effort and they rebuff you and say, I don't ever want to talk to you again, piss off, you know, you can at least, your conscience is clear, you made that effort. You tried. But what is it like for life to run out and you didn't even try? You didn't even make the effort. And you sit around and go, I wish we had healed this feud between. I wish we had buried the hatchet on this. And I wish we had repaired our relationship. And you have this react because you did never put forth that effort. And you've got to. If you sit around and wait for everybody else to do it, there's no guarantee it's ever going to happen. You've got to make that effort. Well, you've got to own your responsibility for your relationships with other people, you know, how you relate to people and whatnot. If you know, you wish you had a lot of friends, you know, you wish you had a lot of friends, but yet everybody hates you. The problem isn't everybody else. You know, the problem, you have to get real. You have to accept that, you know, you need to change something about yourself. And people won't do that because it's pride. Same reason people don't go back and try to fix family rifts and repair their relationships with family members, because they get caught up in pride. Well, problem, I wish I had a bunch of friends. Why don't you have a bunch of friends? Well, because there's all of these problems with people. There's all of these problems with other people. You won't have any control over that, though. Do you want friends or not? Well, yeah. Okay, then you've got to figure out what you need to change about the way you relate to people. Because if you don't have any friends, you don't have anybody you talk to, or people just in general think you're an asshole, then you're probably an asshole. You know, I'm sure you don't think of yourself that way, but you are the problem. You are the common denominator here. And you're the only thing that you control. You want to have friends. You want to have better relationships with the people around you. Want people to like you. Then figure out why they don't. I mean, there's something about you that they don't like. You know, I mean, whether it's the way you relate to, like I say, family, friends, your coworkers, women, men, whatever, the common denominator is you. If you have a problem in this area, then you need to sit around and say, okay, how do I interact with people that is off-putting? Because that's the problem. That's the problem. You know, there's see, this is why you have to set your pride aside to be able to do that. You have to set your pride aside to say, well, you know, obviously everybody I run into doesn't ever want to talk to me again and thinks there's something up with me. You know, and you know, maybe it's just the way you come across.
Maybe it's the way you come across. You come across in a way to where people don't understand. In other words, you might think, God, why do people think, you know, like, I don't want them around me? Well, you know, you don't, because the way you express yourself, you're cinderay. You know, basically, the way you express yourself, it comes across, you're not communicating what you want. You're not communicating what you actually feel. You come across like you're brushing them off. You're coming across like you don't want them anywhere around you. But that's not what you're trying to convey. In other words, the actual problem you're having is a failure in an inability to communicate. You have, and trust me, I've dealt with people my whole life. And, you know, including jobs working in the public. And one of the things I've learned is that people in general have extremely poor communication skills. You know, they'll sit there and say, you'll be like, well, what do you need? And they will stand there and blah, 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 blah for 5 minutes. And when they're done, you have no idea what they need. You're just like, okay, you didn't tell me anything. It's like you have to spell it out. That spills over into the way people communicate in their personal lives. What do you need? Blah, 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 blah. And when they're done, people still don't know what you need. What are you wanting? What are you trying to communicate? In other words, the only problem, you might feel like, oh, there's this huge, real big fault with myself. But the reality is, actually, you just have a communication problem. Your heart's in the right place. What you're trying to do is in the right place, but you're really bad at communicating that. And people are just simply getting the wrong impression. If you can understand that, then you can work on just tweaking your communication skills. It's not that hard. Tweak your communication skills. It's the way you're coming off. You know, people are perceiving you differently than what you're trying to convey to them. You know, the message they're receiving is not the one you're intending to transmit. And but you've got to set aside your pride, because otherwise you're going to sit around and you're going to get caught in this rut. What's the problem with all these people? I'm reaching out to these people. I'm trying to tell these people, and every one of them. It's kind of a double trap, because we have so many societal problems now. We have so many societal problems. I mean, there are. And socially, people are becoming more. The social cohesion is coming apart between everybody, between men and women. I mean, just the whole social fabric is tearing. We have all of these problems, and we're very much aware of those. We know there's all of those problems, and you can go down the list. We talk about them every week. You listen to Radio Albin every day and hear about all these societal problems we have. Here's the problem with that. That makes a handy excuse. It makes a really handy excuse to say, well, the problem is A, B, C, D. You know, we got all these issues. That's the problem. That's why nobody likes me. That's why everybody I approach, you know, doesn't want to have anything to do with me, whatever the case may be. In other words, that's a handy excuse. Well, again, you come back to you don't have the ability to control what other people do. You don't have the ability to fix these problems. You've got control over yourself. What do you want? Do you want closer relationships with the opposite sex? Do you want closer relationships with your family? Do you want more friends? What do you want? What do you need to do to go about achieving that? I'm not saying everybody's going to like you. I'm not going to say, you know, trying to heal that family rift is going to be successful. But you've got to be able to put your pride aside and put forth that effort. You've got to be able to do what you can do, which is, you know, again, your control over yourself. Like I say, I see people and they keep coming up short in these areas in their lives. And I think at the end of the day, their problem is communication. Like I say, most people on average have really poor communication skills. They really do. You talk to them, and like I say, you can talk to them for an hour, and in the end of that hour, you still have no idea what the hell they're even trying to say. What are they going on about? This is a normal thing, and I think a lot of things, people's family relationships or relationships with other people, how they work with other people, you know, it's not even a personality problem for them. It's just they're really bad at communicating. They're not conveying what they want to other people, and they're giving this wrong impression. Sad thing is, we wind up a lot of times, I think, denying ourselves the kind of life we want to lead. You know, you say that, and like you can hear people say something along that similar lines. And what it'll wind up be talking about is what money, like quality of life in this country is defined by money. How much money do you got? And that's how this crumbling society says, you know, how worthy your life is, how fulfilling your life is. And I'm going to tell you, that's bullshit. It's about the relationships you have with other people. And they want you off chasing mammon. They want you off chasing money and gauging the quality of your life with money. When you're on your deathbed and you've got 15 minutes left to live and you're getting close to breathing your last, you're going to sit around and say, man, if I only had another $100,000 in the bank, if I only had $10,000, if I only had, you know, another million, whatever the case may be. It's like the old adage that nobody on their deathbed says, I should have spent more time at the office. It's another one of the lies that's promoted in the society. Your meaning of your life, quality of your life is dictated by how much money you have. Again, that's bullshit. When you're on your deathbed, when your life is winding down, it's your family. It's those around you, the people you care about. You know, the relationships you had with people, those are the things you're going to look back on. Those are the things you're going to look at. And those are the things you have control over. You know, you're only going to make however much money you're going to make. That's chasing a ghost. You get to the end and you say, I wish I would have fixed this relationship with my parents before they passed away. But why didn't you? You have this regret. Why didn't you? Because you couldn't set your pride aside. You couldn't set your pride aside long enough to be the one to reach out first. And when the clock runs out, it's too late. I mean, that's the tragedy of it. It's too late. You go through life saying, I wish I could have had these closer relationships with those around me. I wish I'd been closer to my kids, my brother, my sister, my friends, the people that, you know, around me, whatever the case may be. I wish I would have had that. Why didn't you? Because you never had the ability to stop and reflect on, why am I not getting this? What is it about me? What do I need to adjust and change? And like I say, most times I really do. I think most of the time it comes down to just being a communication issue. You're not communicating what it is you're wanting from other people. And I think the relationships we have in this life, you know, this is a part of our spiritual growth too. You know, this is one. Jesus said, you know, no greater love hath a man that he lay down his life for his friends. You know, this is biblical. This is biblical love, but it's also illustrated in our relationships with other people. No greater love than to lay down your life for your friends, sacrifice your life for your friends. That it's shown in our relationships with other people. That's why there's other people here. We're not just in a simulation with just ourselves. There's other people we communicate with and we interact with. And this also is a part of our growth spiritually. The point here, as we get ready to wrap up, and when I decided to jot this down and discuss it this week, I thought, you know, I don't even know if it belongs in the Christian-specific segment. But at the end of the day, I decided, you know, God is the one who gives us this block of time. You know, God gives us this life, however long it's going to be. And you can't break away from the point that's why we're here, is to learn about him. But that's also why there's other people here and we interact with other people and we have these relationships with other people. We learn about him also through learning about ourselves and learning about other people and learning how we relate with other people. And it says in the Bible, you know, if you say you love Christ, but you hate your brother, then you don't really love Christ. How can you hate how can you love the creator when you hate the creation? Now, don't get me wrong. I get more fed up with people than anybody. I get more fed up with people than anybody. But what I'm talking about is, if you basically just go around, you just hate people in general, then no, you can't know the love of God. You got to have these relationships with other people. We got to work on these relationships with other people. And in this, we also further our relationship with Christ. We understand him as we also relate to other people. It's all interconnected. But again, we have this time on earth. You don't want to be at the end and regret that you didn't have the type of relationships with people that you wanted to have. Now is the time. to build those relationships, to have those kind of relationships. To the furthest of your ability. Again, you don't control people. You can't force them, you know, to want to have that relationship with you. You might reach out to your family members and they might tell you, no, I don't want to ever have anything to do with you again. And if so, that's that. But you made that effort. So it isn't your regret when the clock runs out. But we are on a clock. We are always on a clock. And it's always every day that you wake up, your day closer to that final trial of facing death. And we don't know when it's coming about. You want to repair those relationships. You want to have the relationships that you want to have in life. You want to get the things out of life. You know, the real things. I'm not talking money things. The real things. Relationships. The kind of relationships you want to have with other people. You know, now is the time. Do it now. Because the clock is ticking. You get to the end and say, I wish I could have had this kind of relationship with my family. Well, it's too late now. And it's ultimately very sad. Because you got to put that effort on. You can't just wait around. You can't wait around for everybody else to come around and do what you're hoping they will do. You've got to make that effort yourself. That's why you're here. And like I say, for this very limited time, you want the things you want out of life. You got to reach out and you got to try to do it. You got to try to grab those things. You got to try to accomplish those things. Anyway, look, now is the time. Live life to the fullest. You know, we have this life, good, bad, in between. You know, keep on living. Live life to the fullest. Get everything you can out of it. Don't squander it. Don't get stagnant. Don't squander the time you have. You know, live your life to the fullest. Get what you can out of it. Because inevitably, at some point in time, it's all going to be over. We're going to go ahead and get on out of here. I hope you had something, got something out of this week's discussion. I know it's a little different than what we usually do in the Christian specific segment. You know, and like I said, I was in and out on whether I have that, whether to talk about this in this segment or just in the show in general. But again, you can't talk about like life itself really without talking about the giver of life. God has given you this life. You know, treat it as the gift that it is. We're going to get on out of here. Thank you for joining us this week. Hope you'll be back next week right here for the Parish of the Patriots.